Hello, everyone. Welcome to Science Unscripted. Connor here.
And again.
And we have a couple studies for you today. And I'm going to say right at the top here, one big caveat is that my two studies, the two things I'm going to talk about, have a very small sample size. But I think they're worth discussing anyway.
Okay. So, I have no idea what's coming at me.
No, you don't.
I don't know what you're going to be talking about here, Connor. But
the first one, the first one is connected to you in a way. I've done this before. But actually connected to the university that you went to. So this
Yale?
One, yeah. This one, that was one of the participating
universities. I love how Germans call it jail.
They call Yale University jail?
Because of the pronunciation of the Y and the J in German.
So you went,
you went to jail.
So you went to jail for 4 years?
Yeah. And you got a degree and then got out.
Got out of jail quick. This study I found interesting because it addresses a question that I think all of us either think about consciously or subconsciously. And it's like this, Gabe. Mm-hmm. When you have an interaction with somebody, a random stranger, and you end up chatting, you're at a bus stop, you go to the supermarket, wherever.
Yeah.
How often or how much do you think they like you by the end of it?
Oh, generally speaking.
A percentage of them. How many of them?
Most of my interactions, my random interactions on the street are pretty decent. I think 8 of 10 like me.
Yeah, 80%. Yeah. That's the question today. How many actually do? And I'm going to go and read the abstract just because I love the way it's phrased. This is a research into what's called the liking gap. And it goes like this. Having conversations with new people is an important and rewarding part of social life. I totally agree.
Talking to strangers, yeah.
Yeah, yet conversations can also be intimidating and anxiety-provoking, and this makes people wonder and worry about what their conversation partners really think of them. Mm. Are people accurate in their estimates? That's the question, and I thought that was worth looking into, even though, again, the sample size was small. So, close to Yale. It looks like that was one of the four universities involved. They recruited not very many people at the end of the day because I think they offered them...
Was this in New Haven?
It said, we recruited community members of all ages using flyers posted on and near Yale University's campus.
Oh, that's interesting because the people who live in New Haven, Connecticut, where Yale is located, don't necessarily like Yale students.
Okay.
At all.
So, okay, but here's the thing is I think they got exclusively Yale students.
Oh, so they got Yaleys, aren't
they? Yeah, and part of that was that they, in exchange for participating in the study, you know what you got?
Mm.
$10.
$10. And they were asking Yale people to talk about their social interactions?
What they did is they recruited 26 women and 10 men. So this is skewed toward women. You could say that this is a study... that reflects more
36
how...
36 people, most of them women. Okay.
And each session, what they did is they took two same-sex participants, they got to the lab, and they sat them down in a room for 5 minutes. And they kind of tricked them and said, you know, look, this is about how a conversation flows or how quickly something... And they had a timer in there. And they give them a bunch of basic icebreaker conversational questions. Where are you from? What are some of your hobbies? And these two people interacted with each other.
Yeah, yeah.
They did that for 5 minutes, and the experimenter returned, said, okay, go off into the different rooms, fill out these surveys. First survey, how did you feel about the other person?
Yeah.
Did you like them? A lot? A little? Somewhere in the middle? Did you not like them? Could you see yourself becoming friends with them? Yeah. And then here's the next part. How do you think they perceived you?
All right, give me the numbers.
So there's a difference. I'm rounding a little bit up and rounding down. But if you want to say that there is an average on a scale of 7, people averaged, when they're talking about the other person, they gave him a 6. Like, they liked him.
Mm-hmm.
They really seemed to like him. Then they all, you know, gave a number for themselves, and that average was closer to 5.
So they thought that people were going to say 5 about them.
Right.
And what they actually said about other people was 6.
Correct. So if everyone's saying 6 about other people and everyone's saying 5 about themselves, then something's wrong there. The 5 can't actually be true. The 6 is true. So this is what's known as the liking gap. There is a gap. There's a clear gap. And for anyone who's ever walked away from a random interaction, whether with a barista or whoever, and thought, boy, did I goof that up and they must think I'm a fool, that's possible. But probably not. It's probably not as bad as you think. In fact, they probably like you more. Than you realize. And that is, I think that's wonderful news, right?
Huh.
You can walk away from conversations, random interactions, feeling more confident about how they perceived you.
And based on that study of 36 people, we can say that.
Not really. It's a small sample size. I'll go back to saying that. And again, it's skewed very heavily toward women. So what this study would indicate is it possible that women are more harsh on themselves when kind of grading their own interactions than men are? I didn't see that in the data. It was too small.
It's good to know. I have three girls, so...
Three daughters.
Take that knowledge with me.
And last point here, this is like a lot of studies out there, a very good indication of how 36 college-aged people think. Mm. But as you skew older, does that change over time? Do we become more self-aware and therefore self-critical?
And less likable?
Do we become less likable? That could be.
What else you got?
Well, I've got something else for you, but you've got something for me as well.
So the backdrop to this, Connor, is the emails that have been pouring in, again, continue to pour in from Canada. I'm gonna put this to bed. We've also had people getting in touch asking us not to talk about Canada anymore because...
Don't talk about Canada.
They didn't realize that this was a politics show.
No, that was a fair point. David, I wrote him a long email back explaining our logic or why we felt this was a really important topic, an intersection of politics, public health, virology, epidemiology. And frankly, I do understand if you're Canadian and you're listening to this now, you've been inundated with that news story, with a really ugly news story. Anyway, though, Gabe, what do you got there?
Yeah, there's a survey on what Canadians think about the Freedom Convoy and the protests that have happened in the wake. And let me just throw some numbers at you, Connor. This is from a polling firm called Maru, run by John Wright. He's a Canadian. He's been doing this forever. Here's a sampling of the data. Nearly 70% of Canadians support Prime Minister Trudeau invoking the Emergencies Act, so using violence to remove the blockades. 70%. 7 of 10 Canadians are okay with that.
Or using force. Using
force.
Using police or, whoever.
That's startling. 82% say there is, quote, no way the Ottawa occupation should have gone on this long.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty resounding there. A majority, 54%, say they are now, quote, ashamed to be a Canadian.
84? No.
Sorry, 54. Majority.
Oh, 50%.
Did I say 84? Sorry. 54% ashamed to be Canadian. So these are serious numbers. Many more than that, 71%, say, quote, we are in international embarrassment.
Wow.
Nearly 70% of all Canadians feel that any politicians who supported the occupation should, quote, be voted out of office. So this is the last time we're going to talk about Canada for a while. But I think those numbers there, even though we have so many listeners, again, who get up at 4:30 in the morning and listen to us on the CBC, thank you. A heartfelt thank you to the people who responded their alarms at that time on a Sunday to listen to our voices.
No, that is.
Those are some numbers, and that's science right there. Canadians reject what went down in their country over the past month.
And what has been stopped at this point? Fortunately, at the time that we last spoke about it, that was an event or a protest that was spreading across the world. There were I don't know, copycat protests in France. Mm-hmm. In New Zealand, and at the time, nobody really knew what the implications were.
Yeah,
and it is nice to have that, have come to a close.
And thanks to the people also who have written in particular to Carol Guida, who
from Canada. That's where you got a lot of that information.
Yeah, that last survey was not exactly what Carol pointed out, but she sent another survey that said a lot of the same stuff. So thanks, Carol.
Great. On to the third and final study. Again, very small sample size. Gabe, I want you to finish this sentence for me. Sorry to put you on the spot for the second time today.
Yeah.
Viagra is a promising treatment for ...
Depression?
What? Well, I don't...
By extension, by proxy?
By
erectile dysfunction.
That's the clear one, right?
Yeah.
But what would be like an innovative thing to do with this drug? What would be a kind of an unexpected... end to that sentence. Viagra is a promising treatment for...
myopia.
That would be unexpected. But this one even I thought was more unexpected.
Yeah.
Viagra is a promising treatment for dogs with an often fatal eating disorder. talk about a headline that grabs your attention. An often fatal eating disorder. I can hardly say it.
Which one?
So eating disorder, all of these words grab
eating
my attention.
Eating too much or what?
Well, unfortunately, the word eating disorder, you associate it with people who have...
Binge and purge or bulimia or anorexia.
It's not that. So this is something called mega esophagus, which is exactly what it sounds like. Mega esophagus...
Like having a really big throat?
Is having a gigantic...
So they eat too much and then...
I believe it's just...
Die?
No, it's what happens is the esophagus does not work properly. So you can imagine yourself eating food, starting the swallowing process, and it just doesn't go down. And if that food, that chewed up food doesn't go down, you, in the best case, regurgitate it. And of course, that's not...
Asphyxiation? Or?
Actually, that would maybe even be better. One of the co-authors, her name is Jillian Haynes, said, the literature tells us that many dogs with the disease die from aspiration pneumonia. So some of that food is ending up down in their lungs, is how I read that, or are humanely euthanized due to poor quality of life within 8 months of diagnosis. This is fatal
often. So this takes a long time.
It's horrible. Ugh. It's horrible. I'm a dog owner. That's part of the reason that this grabbed my attention. I'm biased
on
this one.
And then you take your dog to the vet and they say Viagra.
Yeah, what's up?
Why would you take Viagra?
Okay,
to cure the mega esophagus.
So because there is no cure. This was crazy. I watched a video which was not attached to the study of a person going to the vet, and they had assumed, I don't know, does my dog have food poisoning? Is it the heat? Nobody thinks mega esophagus. There is no cure. So what they did is they took 10 dogs, and they either gave, you know, five of the dogs sildenafil, if I'm pronouncing that right, that's the generic name for Viagra, or a placebo. And then over the course of 2 weeks, they just kind of watched and waited to see what happened. And then they had a 1 week gap. Stopped, and they switched that. So the group of five dogs that had been getting Viagra, basically, then got the placebo. And all of the 10 dog owners, or the owners of the 10 dogs, had no idea which drug their dog was getting. Obviously, they were blind. But the effect was so powerful that they figured it out. They knew when the dog was getting the drug that worked, because 9 out of 10 owners reported reduced regurgitation during the 2 weeks when liquid sildenafil was administered. And again, one of the co-authors came in and said, look, it was supposed to be blind, but basically it wasn't blind because they could see that their dogs were much better.
Did he or she offer any thoughts on why this might work? What does Viagra do?
So, okay, specifically to the dogs, what's happening is that it's relaxing the smooth muscle of the lower esophagus. That's what they're saying here. So it can open up and let the food pass on down to the stomach. That's what they're assuming is happening. That's what they believe is happening. But they did a video fluoroscopy, which is basically like an x-ray where you can move it around. And they couldn't actually see that happening in the dogs. Now, with the drug itself...
Sildenafil?
Yeah.
Is that a muscle relaxant or what?
It basically dilates your blood vessels, and this has a couple of different effects. The one is very well known. It's also used to treat elevated pulmonary blood pressure in dogs and humans. So pulmonary meaning your lungs. If the blood pressure in your lungs is high.
Okay, so there's a precedent for using it on dogs.
Yes, and finally, last thing I'll say on this one. I mean, all of it's great news. This was a disease I didn't know could exist.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to know that there seems to be a treatment for it for anyone out there who
has
a dog.
What are the symptoms if your dog is struggling?
Suddenly regurgitating a lot of food is primarily what should cause you to go into the veterinarian if you can afford it is actually a difficult part of it. One of the co-authors, that same co-author, Jillian, said it's always important to recognize the commitment of the owners in these studies because without them, advancements in veterinary medicine just aren't possible. And the last thing is it said there were no known side effects. And I reread that because
for male dogs? Or?
That's what I was wondering. Is that an issue? Because that's sure an awkward situation.
Oh, you mean when the comes out?
Oh, God.
I'm so sorry. When that happens down there.
Yeah, that was my question. One of the questions I had because, yeah, of course, this is a drug that has that effect in adult males. According to this here, I don't think that's a side effect. So it's not like if your dog hasn't been spayed, you're suddenly going to, you know, fix this problem, but all of a sudden have a litter of puppies as a result. That shouldn't be the issue.
Okay.
So good news, yeah. Small sample size, 10, we're talking about 10 dogs and 36 people with the liking gap, but all in all, good news on that front.
Yeah, and we're never talking about Canada ever again.
No, this is the last time forever. With that in mind, we'd love emails, even from, you know, from Canada, suhaddw.com.
Science Unscripted.